the breath to be the anchor to the present moment. The mind will do what the mind does in spinning stories, making plans, recalling conversations from last week or 10 years ago. And when we find ourselves caught in these story patterns or whatever the mind might be doing, just allow yourself to come back to the breath. Remember the sense of home base that's here and available. And whether we follow the breath through the experience of the inhalations and exhalations through our nostril or mouth, or in the rising and falling of our chest, or in the expansion of the belly, allow yourself to pick one of those places that feels the most easy, easeful, and allow that to be your anchor. But your attention can rest on this movement of the breath as the expression of our life force. And to be as curious as you can about these experiences of moment-to-moment breath, and allowing yourself to come back, stepping off the thought train, so to speak, and coming back home to your body, to your breath, like a friend that's always waiting for us. So good morning once again. I'm wondering if we could start by going in the room and sharing our names, if you feel comfortable, and to share the sound of something that you love, kind of pulling a little bit from last week when we explored the notion of deep listening, and just a sound that you love. So my name's Grace, and what came up when I asked myself the question was the sound of my daughter giggling.
I'm Lisa, and the sound that I love is
I love that image. Thank you.
The sound that I love is the
No, not necessarily. Thank you. And thank you for sharing. I feel like I went on this nice trip of hearing the different sounds and just feeling so touched. And part of what I wanted to explore today together are the twin practices of compassion and forgiveness. And in the teachings, there are the four divine abodes of the heart, the four great perfections. They're also called the qualities of loving kindness, or metta, the qualities of compassion, karuna, the qualities of mudita, these are the Pali words, for sympathetic joy, and the fourth, which is considered the crown jewel of the heart, is upekkha in Pali, in the sense of equanimity. And each of these four qualities balance each other out. Without one, we can lean way too far over into another. And so if we, with compassion, we can get so caught up in the suffering that we get really off balance and stressed sometimes. And then the equanimity can have us say, no, stay here, stay centered and grounded. And I've recently heard it described that in the West, two other family members were joined to these divine abodes, and they are the practices and qualities of gratitude and generosity and forgiveness. And today I wanted to play around I chose these two, the compassion and forgiveness, because I think as parents, these qualities and really directed toward ourselves of how do we strengthen our sense of compassion towards ourselves when we screw up or we're not acting in the best parenting way we want to, and we catch ourselves, and how to meet that catch with a sense of compassion. Compassion and empathy for ourselves and also for our kids, that sense of really remembering the age that our kids are and to imagine what it's like to be them and how they experience the world and the pressures and the stresses. And that they're young, I often find myself, when I have these expectations of my kid, saying like, she's six, or she just turned seven, she's seven. You know, what are really reasonable expectations for her? And then with forgiveness, it's such a rich practice, and I think it's such a profound thing to model for our kids, both forgiveness for ourselves when we screw up, but also when our kids do stuff that just makes us really mad. And I've seen myself, happily not so much anymore, but when Jess will do something that just pisses me off, and holding on to it, and you know, an hour later, I'm still kind of mad about it. And noticing with her, I can do something that angers her, and it's gone. There, she doesn't hold anything. And she even said last night, like, "What's a grudge?" I don't know where I come from. Like, well, but the beauty with kids that so often they don't. That the storms of their emotions come, and they're really angry, and then 2 seconds later, they're laughing and playing, and you know, whatever. So that is such a gift to be able to witness, and it's one of the gifts that our kids offer to us of this ability not to get caught and staying like, yes, they have these big whirlwinds and then they just keep on going. And as adults, we tend to get more stuck and fixed and like, remember that thing you said? I'm still mad about it, and do I need to be? And that opening of freedom that comes when we offer the forgiveness. Let's go back with compassion. Let's read a couple of these quotes. This one from Chaga Tuko Rinpoche. Could we exclude any from our compassion any more than the sun could exclude any from the warmth and radiance of its rays? And that pointing to all beings can be included in our compassion. That sense of the compassion really is often described as a quivering of the heart. And when listening to the descriptions of the sounds of, I too, Jessica, with your baby breathing, could hear, it was so sweet in the meditation, or the sound of the kids' feet running, that there was a way that I felt so touched by that. And it's that quivering of the heart to allow ourselves to be open to being touched by that which is beautiful in the world and the suffering. That when we close our eyes to the suffering, and there's no shortage of suffering in the world, that there's a way we kind of close part of ourselves down. But how do we stay open to it, to see, to take in, wow, there is a lot of suffering, and it's not just, oh, you over there are suffering, but that suffering is a universal experience. And I think in parents, it's so nice to come together as parents, like, whoo, as parents, there's some serious suffering going on when it gets so difficult. And last night, I got home late from work and getting my daughter to bed, and I had work to do afterwards, and she was not sleeping, and I was getting stressed, like, you need to go to bed because I need to work on my compassion talk. And it was just so funny. Like, okay, let's make a minute. And I got it and said, look, I'm stressed and that's what you're feeling. And I apologize. And I've been listening to Larry Yang, has a lot of talks on forgiveness. And a piece that I think is so beautiful is he really stresses the nature of how relational forgiveness is, that I ask for your forgiveness and I offer you my forgiveness. And as opposed to, well, I apologize. How the way he phrased it was so beautiful, like in a way to say, well, I apologize. However heartfelt it might be, there's a way that it's kind of an imposition. Like, okay, there, I apologize, it's done. And maybe that's true. But to really start holding it as, okay, will you please accept my apology? And I've been playing that with my daughter. And last night after I got caught, like, will you accept my apology? And it just felt so different. It felt a lot riskier, actually, because what if she said no? I don't. Well, but really feeling that vulnerability that comes, like, no, I ask for your forgiveness. And let alone trying to do that with my husband or with other people in the world, because there is that real claiming of, okay, I don't know, to practice and see how it feels, that sense of an apology, it's sort of like, okay, I apologize, and done, but kind of you're left on the hook a little bit, like, I need something back. And that person may or may not offer it, they may not be ready to, they might, and that with our own offering of forgiveness, that there's a lightness that comes. I will put down the burden of the stress or my anger or the resentment or the grudge that I'm holding and come with a sense of freedom of, like, yeah, I'll take it. So it's this dance of what are we holding on to, what keeps us stuck, and how do we move, and what are we modeling for our kids? Because our kids can, that sense when we see our kids really, I did this bad and I'm a bad person, and that kind of stress, and how do we then help them be like, okay, you made a mistake. Okay. Can you forgive yourself for making a mistake? That idea that we should always get it right. Well, we're not always going to get it right. I don't really know where that idea came from. Because it doesn't work. And it just causes so much stress. And with our kids, too, they can take on the sense, like, I have to get it right. Okay, how can you, as a 4-year-old or 9-year-old or 12-year-old, say, oh, okay, I made a mistake, and how can I learn from that? I got a little carried away in things I wanted to share. There are two stories I want to read. And one is just about a sense of compassion. This is a very sweet book, The Buddha is Still Teaching, Selected Stories by Jack Kornfield. And this is a story shared by Catherine Ingram, who wrote a book called Passionate Presence. A few years ago, I was with a close woman friend in a grocery store in California. The good earth, perhaps. As we snaked along the aisles, we became aware of a mother with a small boy moving in the opposite direction and meeting us head-on in each aisle. The woman barely noticed us because she was so furious with her little boy, who seemed intent on pulling items off the lower shelves. As the mother became more and more frustrated, she started to yell at the kid, and several aisles later had progressed to shaking him by the arm. At this point, my friend spoke up. A wonderful mother of three and founder of a progressive school, she had probably never once in her life treated her child so harshly. I expected my friend to give this woman a solid mother-to-mother talk about controlling herself and about the effect of this behavior had on a child. Braced for a confrontation, I felt a spike in my already elevated adrenaline. Instead, my friend said, "What a beautiful little boy. How old is he?" The woman answered cautiously, "He's 3. My friend went on to comment about how curious he seemed and how her own 3 children were just like him in the grocery store, pulling things off shelves, so interested in all the wonderful colors and packages. He seemed so bright and intelligent, my friend said. The woman had her boy in her arms by now, and a shy smile came upon her face. Gently brushing his hair out of his eyes, she said, "He's very smart and curious, but sometimes he wears me out." My friend responded sympathetically, "Yes, they can do that. They're so full of energy." As we walked away, I heard the mother speaking more kindly to the boy about getting home and cooking his dinner. "We'll have your favorite. Macaroni and cheese," she told him. And I love this story because it's so this sweetness that kind words were able to engender between the mother and son. And also that sense of community, that the ideal that we, you know, like, it takes a village. And it does. But to be able to move in the world, that could be the world, that the words that we would hear from strangers, like, honey, it's okay. It's okay. Not, I'm going to call CPS on you, which is sometimes what happens. And the difference in the world, that sucks that way. But just the extension of kindness of, like, wow, it's hard. It is hard. And I want to share a story. You folks that were here in the fall will remember this, but Kristen Neff is a professor now in Austin. She writes a lot about self-compassion and the importance of engendering in our kids a sense of self-compassion, that sense of, oh, I'm suffering and I'm having a hard time and that's okay, I can hold it. And how all these studies being done on self-compassion versus self-esteem and anyway. But she writes this beautiful piece about, she became interested in compassion. Her son, she writes this when her son was 4, is autistic, and he would have these fits, these tantrums that can be of a particular nature when the kid's on an autistic spectrum. So she writes, when my son was 4, I took him to England on a plane, and he had one of those raging, flailing tantrums that children with autism can experience. Everyone on the plane was looking at us like, I thought everyone was looking at us like they wished that we were dead, and I imagined them thinking, what's wrong with that kid? Why is he acting that way? And what is wrong with that mom? Why can't she control him? I tried to take him to the bathroom, but it was occupied. So in that little space outside the bathroom door, I stood with my out-of-control son and waited it out. I knew the only refuge I had was self-compassion, and I put my hands over my heart and spoke words of comfort mostly to myself. This is so hard, darling, I said softly. I am so sorry you are going through this, but I am here for you. And it may sound a little mushy by treating myself kindly. I was actually doing something scientifically proven to help. One of the things unique to mammals is that we are programmed to respond to warmth, to gentle touch, and soft vocalizations. That's what keeps vulnerable infants close to their mothers and safe from harm. So when we provide that kind of touch and calm reassurance to ourselves, we actually reduce levels of stress hormones and boost the feel-good ones. And then we feel safe and comforted in the optimal frame to do our best. And that, of course, is every parent's goal. So it could sound weird, like, what? Talk to myself that way? But it really is a programming and letting different chemicals be released in the brain. And again, that sense of modeling for our kids. Yeah, darling, this is so hard. It's hard to be in this place. And I'm with you. Both to offer that to ourselves when we want, the habit might be to beat ourselves up as, why did I do that and why did I say that? Wow, this is hard. I'm really caught. And for our kids. Oh, wow, I see you're really suffering. Let me sit beside you. And not try to fix and meddle, but just like, I'm here with you in this hard, hard place. So there's another story. It's told a lot in the Dharma world, and you may have heard it, but I love it, and I think I cry every time I read it. And it's another collection from Jack's, The Art of Forgiveness, Loving Kindness, and Peace. And the story is in, I think, at least 4 different books. It is one of these beautiful stories about forgiveness. And the for me, pointing to the incredible resilience and beauty of the heart when we remember. And I feel like we just get caught and we forget. And when we can take the time to pause and really connect in back to our body and to feel our heart, then the luminous quality of the heart can come out. We just have to remember it. So here's the story. The way it's set up is Jack's on a train in D.C. and someone that he meets tells him the story, that he's working this program with kids that were part of a gang. So one 14-year-old boy in his program had shot and killed an innocent teenager to prove himself to the gang. At the trial, the victim's mother sat impassively silent until the end, when the youth was convicted of the killing. After the verdict was announced, she stood up slowly and stared directly at him and said, I'm going to kill you. And then the youth was taken away to serve several years in the juvenile facility. After the first half year, the mother of the slain child went to visit his killer. He had been living on the streets before killing, and she was the only visitor he'd had. For a time, they talked, and when she left, she gave him some money for cigarettes. And then she started, step by step, to visit him more regularly, bringing food and small gifts. Near the end of his 3-year sentence, she asked him what he would be doing when he got out. He was confused and very uncertain, so she offered to set him up with a job at a friend's company. And then she inquired, well, where are you going to live? Well, he had no family to return to, and she offered him temporary use of the spare room in her home. For 8 months he lived there. He ate her food and worked at the job. And then one evening she called him into the living room to talk. She sat down opposite and waited, and then she said, do you remember that day in the courtroom when I said I was going to kill you? I sure do. He replied, well, I did. She went on, I did not want the boy. He could kill my son for no reason to remain alive on this earth. I wanted him to die. And that's why I started to visit you and bring you things. And that's why I got you that job and let you live here in my house. That's how I set about changing you. And that old boy, he's gone. So now I want to ask you, since my son is gone, and that killer is gone, if you'll stay here. I've got a room, and I'd like to adopt you, if you'll let me. And she became the mother of her son's killer, the mother he never had. So the power of the human heart and that ability of parents to reach out and care, to see what is true, that there was this lost boy who did something unthinkable, and for the mom to experience that which is unimaginable and to come through it in this way. And it feels like an example that's so hard to imagine, but in a way, what choice did she have? To live with a sense of anger and the closed downness that can come, or to say, I'm going to take the path of freedom and love this boy who needs me. So, you thought it was going to be a light day because it was the last class? No, let's pull them all. There are a lot of different directions I could go. But what I will do, rather than continue, well, I'll read this. So the Pali word for forgiveness is kama, K-H-A-M-A, and it means the earth. A mind like the earth is non-reactive and unperturbed. When you forgive me for harming you, you decide not to retaliate, to seek no revenge. You don't have to like me. You simply unburden yourself of the weight of resentment. This is a gift you can give both of us, totally and on your own, without my having to know or understand what you've done. This is an article on reconciliation by Thinisaro. But this idea of it's such internal work, our ability to work with forgiveness, that it's true, nobody else needs to know. But it does change the field, that if we can forgive ourselves for not living up to being the best mom or dad that we are, and if we can forgive our kids for when they make mistakes, forgive our partners, that there we just put down a lot of things. Like we have enough burdens to carry to be able to take stock of what can I put down? And maybe it's not the time. The one thing that's so important with the forgiveness practice that it's really, you might not be ready to forgive. Okay. So perhaps you set that intention that at some point, may I be ready to forgive. Or may I be ready, just being able to stay with yourself, that there's not a rush, and nor does it happen, and then it's done. Noah Levine writes, the experience of forgiveness is a momentary release. In reality, we don't and can't forgive forever, only in the present moment. This is the good and the bad news. The good part is that we can stop judging ourselves for our inability to let go of resentments once and for all. We forgive in one moment, we become resentful again in the next. This is not a failure to forgive. It's just a failure to understand impermanence. The bad news is that forgiveness is not something that we will ever be done with. It's an ongoing aspect of our lives. and thus necessitates a vigilant practice of moment-to-moment letting go. Right. So how about we close our eyes? And I wanted to lead us on a little bit of a meditation on karuna and on forgiveness, and I'll lead this meditation, and then I'd like us to stay together today, and we'll have a time for discussion. So again, close your eyes and just allow yourself to get into a comfortable position. And ask us to call to mind and imagine this person coming to sit in front of us, someone who is very dear to you, and the relationship is easy. That if you imagine sitting across from this person, your heart gladdens. It just feels good. It's not a complicated relationship. It can be a teacher. It can be someone you've never met, but of whom you really admire. And no need to shop around for the perfect person. Just allow whoever came to come and to meet this person, and to the extent that it feels comfortable, to really drop into that experience of sitting across from them. And this person may be alive or no longer here on this earth. And as you take in sitting with this person, to offer them the phrases of compassion. The first one may be, may you be held in the arms of compassion. May you be held in the arms of compassion. May your pain and sorrow be eased. May you be at peace. Another phrase can be, to borrow from Thich Nhat Hanh, simply, darling, I care about your suffering. And if your own phrases come to mind, feel free to use whatever feels natural and has this sense of offering and wishing for compassion. May you be held in the arms of compassion. May your pain and sorrow be eased. May you be at peace. And then, in some way, perhaps internally, to bow to this person who came to you. And just as you wish that person to feel the arms of compassion, so too can you then extend that wish to yourself. May I be held in the arms of compassion. May my pain and sorrow be eased. May I be at peace. Or to imagine putting your hands on your heart to say, darling, I care about your suffering. May I be held in the arms of compassion. May my pain and sorrow be eased. May I be at peace. And to the extent that you can, to drink in these well wishes of compassion, self-compassion. And then to imagine sitting in front of your child or children. And just as you extended these wishes to that first person and then to yourself, so too can you extend this wish to your kids or to your child. May you be held in the arms of compassion. May your pain and sorrow be eased. May you be at peace. And it's almost as if we're wrapping our child or our kids in this warm blanket of our compassion and the compassion that exists in the world. May you be held in the arms of compassion. May your pain and sorrow be eased. May you be at peace. And to imagine your kids taking this in, that they too can drink from these waters of compassion. To know that we, as their parents, see the suffering and can hold it with them. And then with our eyes closed, to picture this Sangha here and the folks online to have a sense of a circle of friends or Sangha, and to extend this well-wishing of compassion to the people in this room and to the classmates that are in Australia and Germany, around the world joining us. May you be held in the arms of compassion. May your pain and sorrow be eased. May you be at peace. And to imagine this extension of compassion to each of us participating in this class, both online and in the present day here. And it's like this ripple of a pond, and it extends in all directions so that no one is left out. Like the rays of the sun touches all beings, so too can we offer this sense of compassion to all beings. May all beings have the sense of feeling held in the arms of compassion. And I was going to go through and do the forgiveness meditation, but I'm aware of the time, and the forgiveness meditation can be intense, and I don't want to rush it. So if we kind of come back to that sense of imagining the rippling of compassion and touching all beings, that all beings can have the sense of being held in the arms of compassion. And sending it out in all directions so that no one is left out. So on the handout, you'll find some of the phrases for forgiveness. So if you wanted to practice it at home, by all means, do so. But I wanted to leave some time for us to share either what came up in this experience, what perhaps became evoked in the sense of thinking about compassion or forgiveness, or just in general, sort of our last meeting together in this form. I hope that you'll come back in April. But just to make space for us to share together as a group. And we do have a mic, which would be great if you would be comfortable using it, because then the folks joining us online could hear. But whatever you need to do to take care of yourself. So whatever you would like to share, please share.
On the way here today, my husband and I were talking about this being our last class and how we felt about the series. And the thing I came up with is there just felt like a subtle shift in our home. That it was hard to put a word to, but that compassion, that allowing space, that being curious is all the opposite of what I feel like sometimes being a parent is, or at least the way I practiced, right? Because we like to be the all-knowers and the guiders and the ones with the answers, and just how that shift has inside changed me. Maybe my son's noticed it a little bit, I don't know. We've noticed it together in our relationship in a subtle way, and it has a ripple effect, so thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for sharing that. Someone. Thank you for sharing this. Well, there's a story I could share about expectations. And Shelley, you heard this on the family day with Sylvia, but there was a talk on This American Life about a boy who was blind. And he learned how to echolocate. He'd click like a bat. And the story tells of him, he could ride his bike like any of us by clicking. And that this boy's mother, he had cancer of the eyes, and when he was 14 months old, he had to have his eyeballs removed. And before then, he was this tremendous climber. Even at 8, before he could walk, he would climb up everything, and he lost his sight, he lost his eyes, and he was still a big climber. And the grandmother was like, you better essentially like wrap that kid in plastic, because he's going to get hurt. And the boy just wanted to climb, and the mom made the decision, I'm going to treat him like he's a sighted boy, and she let him go. And he would climb, and he would fall. And he taught himself to ride his bike, and he would ride his bike up the neighborhood hill and turn down and bomb down the neighborhood hill. And he couldn't see. And sometimes he'd smash into a pole or he'd smash into a car. And still she let him go. And sort of imagining as a mom taking my blind son to the emergency room for the umpteenth time to say, yeah, he rides his bike and I let him. But the expectation that she had of her boy, like, I'm going to expect you to move in the world. And in the story, the narrative is that he moves very fluidly. He doesn't have that, because he's very comfortable spatially. And it's his view that all blind people, if you expect them to see, could see. And there have been test brain studies done. There's this woman in England who did an MRI of all blind people that could echolocate. And they'd have these different objects, like a wall. And the people would echo like it, they'd click, 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 and they'd have a mic. And then the people would be in the MRI and they'd play the sound of the click for the wall or for a salad bowl or a salad bowl on a fishing net, fishing rod. And the visual cortex in the brain would light up of the blind people as they heard the sound of the salad bowl, and they'd be able to identify, that's a salad bowl and a fishing rod, that's a wall, that's a book. And that in their mind's eye, it would light up. And that the understanding is that they had a sense of peripheral vision. So if we walk like we're looking at a cell phone, they can take in the world that way through one's expectations that you can see. And to me, the story resonates so much, both as that mom who said, okay, I'll let go. I'll let you ride your bike into a wall. And of what that sense of expectations, I've moved off the theme of compassion and forgiveness, but that sense of expectations, like what do we expect of ourselves as parents? How realistic are our own expectations? How high is that bar? And there's nothing wrong with having a high bar, but a lot of suffering can come when we fall short. So how do we meet the expectations that we have with a looseness of, okay, that's an aspiration. I'm going to do my best, and boy, some days I'm going to be right there, and wow, some days I'm really not. Okay. How do I hold myself in the arms of compassion to be okay with both my expectations of myself, of my kid, of my children, and to have a sense of ease with it, that we're doing our best, that we come together as parents to find a sense of sangha, to be supportive, because we can't do this by ourselves, or it's awfully hard. And I think that's why it's so wonderful as parents to be able to come and talk. Like, there are so many different groups here, but to be able to have a group dedicated to, it's hard to be a parent. It's hard to be the kind of parent we want to be. And how do we let go? One of the phrases around, like, the causes and conditions that allow us to be the way we are as parents, what we learn from our own parents or school or our own personalities or whatever, these conditions, those conditions aren't our fault, but they are our responsibility to understand. And by the pausing that can come by learning how to pause through sitting on the cushion or whatever the practice is, that we can learn to become more responsive and less reactive. And noticing when we are more reactive, what's happening? Are we tired? You know, how much reserve do we feel? None? Okay. Then what do I need to take care of myself so I have a little more juice? So I have a little more expansion. Okay. So, and there's still time if anyone would like to share. I can keep going.
What comes up for me with this compassion practice in context of when I've fallen short or I've gotten really angry, really frustrated, when my kids have done something incredibly outside of appropriate boundaries and I get appropriately or even inappropriately angry, and then get some space on it, come back to some compassion for them, compassion for myself, what comes up for me in this class, in all of these sessions, is this pendulum. How okay is the pendulum? How okay is it to go from really angry and really frustrated to compassion, to understanding, to back to frustration? Like, I know that it's better than the alternative, which is not including the compassion part. It's just being frustrated and then chilling out and then frustrated and then chilling out. It's better to be able to come up with compassion. But it also occurs to me that that pendulum is fraught with its own challenges, I think, for what it says to our kids. I think modeling the pendulum is also challenging in a way, like back and forth. I'm angry, I'm compassionate, I'm angry, I'm compassionate. And I don't know what to do with that. Does that make sense?
Because it feels like not being consistent?
Yeah, or? it feels like it's almost forgiving the anger. Let's say their behavior is out of bounds or my behavior is out of bounds, and that the compassion and the empathy is sort of saying it's okay. Well, it's not really, not okay.
No, right.
And then this back and forth thing, and I don't know quite how to manage it as a parent.
And I hear two things. One is that idea that, oh, if we're compassionate, then all things get, it's okay. Mm-hmm. I'll be a doormat. It's okay. I'm compassionate. And that's there's no skill in that whatsoever. That we can still have that sort of discernment, what's appropriate behavior, and hold it. It's just how much of an edge do we bring in? Is the anger appropriate to the situation, or am I bringing anger from
well, you did this, you know, that sort of second arrow. Like, how much suffering am I bringing in that's not actually present here, but because of, well, when I was 10, this happened, and I'm so pissed off about it. So there's that piece of knowing that we can still stand, we need to still stay solid in what our expectations are, what's appropriate. These are the family rules. This is what's expected in this family, and what happens when we don't meet those expectations. But I think how I hold that sense of swinging from, like, being really mad to then not, then being in this other place, it's like, I think through the practice, there becomes it stops doing this, and just becomes a little bit, that pendulum swing is less. Mm-hmm. As we just become more steady, and that's where the equanimity can really come in, of like, ooh, okay, how do we keep finding that steady place? And I think it's just a practice, mm-hmm, of noticing and naming it, like, wow, I was really angry yesterday, and now you're experiencing me differently. How is that for you? Is it unnerved? Like, I mean, your kids are old enough to be like, how is it for them? Does it seem weird? Like, how come you're like freaking out and now you're nice? Like, which is the real you? Well, yeah, I'm all of these things.
They actually say that to me.
Yeah.
Right? They do.
Yeah.
What is the real you? Like, which, are you a good mom now? Are you the bad mom now? Are you the red dragon mom now? Are you nice mom now?
Your mom.
Yeah.
Your mom, and it's that Rumi poem of, like, this being human is a guest house, that what comes clears ourself, clears out. Welcome and, you think I would know this by now, welcome and embrace them all the emotions that come. That's the human experience. We don't have to always be nice. I mean, really, how possible is that? Like, but that might be a nice idea. And even the Dalai Lama, oh, do I have it? He talks about, okay, sorry, I'm going to read this from the Dalai Lama. If I had developed bad feelings towards those who make me suffer, this will only destroy my own peace of mind. But if I forgive, my mind becomes calm. Struggle with a calm mind, with compassion. Through analytical meditation, I can now have full conviction that destructive emotions like hatred is of no use. Nowadays, anger, hatred doesn't come. But a little irritation still comes. So he's getting irritated. It's totally okay for us to be irritated, but what do we do with it? You know, and I think to again sort of meet that, like, it's okay to have a range of emotions. Our kids are going to have a range of emotions, and how do they manage it when they freak out? And then be like, okay, are you like freaked out boy? Or are you good boy? You know, no, it's just like, you're my son. Does that help?
Mm-hmm. There's a reason it's called a practice.
Totally. Thank God for it. Anybody else? Please.
So I'm having a hard time differentiating compassion when listening to my child about what happens, someone, bad things happen at school, and empathy, and not just going into her pain and then getting mad at the kids that, say, exclude her in play. You know, she comes home and say, they wouldn't let me play with them, and they said to ignore her, you know, meaning my daughter. And then there are also episodes where she says that she got laughed at in class for saying something, you know, a response maybe to the teacher. And I don't know what to say. You know, I just, of course, I tell her, I feel so, you know, I feel badly for you. I don't, but, and in my mind, I want to say, you know, to tell the kids to go off, you know. So it would be great if I could, I mean, I'm not at that point where I can teach her how to express compassion or forgiveness towards the kids, you know, that make her upset when she comes home.
Right, and how much to pack into that. I mean, I think mm-hmm. to be able to respond,
I start dwelling on it afterward.
Oh, sure. Ooh. Right, I'm going to call the teacher, and that teacher, da-da-da-da-da.
That mom.
Exactly. Right, and just that both place of being able to sit with our kids in that place of like, oh, wow, that is really painful. And see if it's like, tell me more. What else is there? How else is that for you? That's really hard. And not necessarily have to, watching the tendency to want to call the principal or write a letter or whoever, whatever you want to do, as like the mama bear energy comes out, like, I can't protect my kid. And yeah, that's there, but that's not what your daughter's needing. And then at some point, is there a skillful means? Is it worth, do you check in with the teacher at some point or find out what to do? But that first response of, you want to kind of go after anyone that's hurting our kids, and to honor that, like, of course. But that's not really necessarily helpful in that moment, to really be able to meet the moment with an open heart, like, ouch, that really hurts. And not say much else. And to try it, see how she responds. Mm-hmm. So we should probably stop. There are the handouts, and if you could fill them out if you haven't already, I would really appreciate it, as would Spirit Rock. In the spirit of forgiveness, if I have said anything that's offended anyone here in this class or online, then I ask for your forgiveness for that. And I also want to thank you for your generosity in the Donna that, as you know, Spirit Rock doesn't pay the teachers. We come because we love it. And any support that you give us, we really appreciate. And I want to close with something. So if you close your eyes for just this last moment, and I want to read... Which one? Okay. It's hard to choose. Quiet the mind. This is from the parents' Tao Te Ching. Our bodies produce the bodies of our children. Our noisy minds produce the fears of our children. But the Tao produces the spirit of our children. Still the body. Quiet the mind. Discover the spirit. Thank you very much for coming. The next series will start the end of April. Come back, bring your friends. We'd love it, again, to get your feedback, and if you have time to help put the chairs away. Marissa, thank you for all your support of the class. And if you have any questions or want to check in with me, I'm here, and feel free to email me or be in touch. And thank you very much for coming in these 5 weeks. See you soon. Thanks for the folks online.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.